On Point, hosted by Peter Van Aartrijk. Conversations with interesting and informative experts on technology, branding, culture, social media marketing, and other great topics.
Hello again, everybody. This is Peter Van Aartrijk, your host for On Point, a podcast brought to you by our very good friends at Insurance Journal. And today we have the privilege of talking with Sanjay Srivastava, who's the Chief Digital Officer at Genpact, a large consulting firm you may have heard of. And Sanjay, a very good day to you. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Peter. Happy to be here.
Yes, I wondered if you have a very rich background in technology, and not just InsurTech, which the theme of this podcast has taken on in recent months and years maybe. So maybe just you could give us a thumbnail on how you got to where you are today and a little bit about your background.
Absolutely, and I'd be happy to do that. I think I'm going to date myself a little bit here, Peter, but my background is all technology. I started in the early days with hardware, so I built the first set of RISC chips and Unix servers and built the first open system boxes, if you will, and then stayed on to build out the next layers of technology, so the early stages of database and networking and eventually the cloud and internet. I've been in Silicon Valley all my working life. I helped build four startup companies, so I was a serial entrepreneur for a good chunk of my life. Four different, very different technologies, from edge networking to data center automation to predictive analytics to software as a service. And then actually all of those four companies were acquired by other large corporations, public, et cetera. And my fourth company was acquired by Genpact, which is the company I'm now at. And so I came here 6 years ago on the back of that acquisition, and then we have transformed Genpact. And the company itself has transformed to be a digital transformation provider. And so the team that I lead runs our business in digital, which is across all of the different pieces of technologies, and happy to be here. So that's my background, and it's all around technology.
Yeah, so when you say, just one more thing on Genpact, when you say digital transformation provider, I imagine you're in any number of industries. Is insurance of great interest to you? I would think it's one of the last industries left that actually hasn't transformed very well, at least until date.
Actually, insurance is a very large focus for us. And so we don't serve all industries. We serve a few industries that we have strategically chosen and put over a decade's worth of experience in. And insurance is one of the ones that we're really specialized in. When I said digital transformation, I also wanted to bring out that our company started and it has its origins in what I would call business process management and driving that as a managed services. So a lot of fingers on keyboards, eyes on screen, having people actually take on the bulk of the work behind, in the middle, in the back offices and actually get that done. And I think starting with that history, sort of we've taken all of the operating knowledge that we picked up, the knowledge of the IT landscape, the business process itself, and now we're overlaying that with digital technologies to completely transform both how we deliver the work that we traditionally did for clients, but actually now working with insurance as an industry and helping them transform independent of whether or not we do any managed services for them. So half my business is actually going in and actually delivering managed services that use digital technologies. And the other half of the business is actually going in and working with clients, deploying, assessing, discovering, and bringing up to speed digital implementations, and then walking away and letting clients actually operate it on their own. And so both models now at play, and I'd say that this is sort of the big thing we're seeing in the insurance markets now.
Yeah. I mean, I had no idea you guys had 80,000 employees almost. That's really shocking to have. I don't know how you guys manage 80,000 people, but I digress. It's just a tremendous amount of people working for a company.
Yeah. Look, I think on that point, we do have 80,000 employees, and it's actually growing. But actually, even more than that, we have them across many different countries, serving many different clients in many different languages, right? So you've got lots of complexity and diversity in terms of markets, customers, languages, processes, depths that we go into. And so one of, so and that's just the history of the company, and I think we do that really well. What's been interesting is now applying digital technologies on top of that, and then parlaying all of the experience that we've had around that, and then converting them into digital transformations. And what's been interesting is when we think about digital, digital actually spans all boundaries. So it doesn't matter if it's in this country or that. You know, language is now completely a non-sort of criteria because we think about language horizontally. And so in some ways, we have a significant amount of complexity, but equally we use digital to reduce much of that. So it's an interesting world. I also think, by the way, in that microcosm, we see a lot of what I think many of our clients we serve in insurance see, which is the need to have sort of the sort of two speeds in the organization, right? So if you think about us as a company, we take on highly complex business processes, for instance, for insurance companies, and we deliver it for them. We have people that actually take that on and get that job done. And for that part of the organization, which is run the business, if you will, we're actually, you know, delivering to high levels of performance, but very high levels of rigidity and stability and compliance. And so we lock down the environment. We do what we call first time right. We take 6-9 months to kind of get a change done. We dot all the I's, cross all the T's, and it's basically perfect when it comes out. But equally, in the digital business, we have the other half of the organization, and there we're sitting there thinking about how do we make ourselves more agile? How do we increase the velocity? How do we try and test new technologies? How do we pilot and POC new things? And then all of that in a very iterative, very agile, in a very fast-moving fashion. And so there, the benchmarks are, you know, for instance, in part of my group, one of the objectives we set up is we want to fail 50% of the time within the first 3 weeks of a project. And the reason for that is not the fact that you'll fail on the 50%. It's the fact that that's the only way to make sure the other 50% is really, truly edgy, innovative stuff, right? So you've got this mix of cultures, mix of approaches, mix of operating styles, mix of, you know, speeds. And I think that is so critical. It's been important for us to do that, but I actually think it applies to a much broader segment of the world. And certainly many of the clients who serve in insurance, I see the same happening as well.
Well, thank you for the thanks for that. It's very interesting. I missed you at the InsureTech Connect conference last October, where you and I and 5,998,000 of our friends were there, and it was a lot of, I'm not sure I said that right, 6,000 attendees. And you know, it's a lot. It's astonishing, really, when you look at just that conference alone with the mix of entrepreneurs, investors. Traditional, if you can call them that, insurance players all coming together. And I'm just curious, you know, it wasn't your first rodeo when it comes to insurance meetings, I'm sure, but what was your impression? Was there anything different about this meeting, not just the number of people, but just the buzz, the feeling in the room, the sense of where things are headed, maybe a little bit more clear to you now?
Well, first of all, it was really exciting because the buzz and the energy was just super high, and you could just sense it by being there. So I really enjoyed sort of being part of that. I think, you know, as I reflect back to that event and I look through the conversations I've been having with clients we serve and we work with in the insurance industry, I think, you know, it just appears that there's, at least from my perspective, three really large trends in 2019 that are coming together, and they're all converging. You know, you could say colliding, and I think they're going to be driving going forward a lot of, I think, at least what we expect to see and do in serving our clients. So, you know, if I were to lay this out, and it was very evident, by the way, in the discussions we had at the InsureTech event, I think the first big one that's happening is customers are basically in the back of exposure to all of the stuff you and I do in our home lives, right? So I've got my iPhone, I sort my family's photograph is already automatically sorted. I've got the Alexa at home. It can, you know, do a bunch of tasks for me. There's so many things that we've started experiencing in our personal lives. And I think clients in the insurance industry are saying, well, that's great, and I've done this. Now, what about that? And on the back of those experiences, I think they're looking for insurance companies to, A, use these technologies, but, B, deliver very different experiences, right? And so I think that's one big trend. And, you know, the companies have invested in core capabilities around mobility and so on and so forth. But now I think the time's coming where, you know, there's an increasing demand and an accelerated pace and an appetite to sort of be consuming more services digitally. And I think that's driving one very large trend. I think the second big thing that is really going on, and was very evident when you were at the show, is this whole idea of the future of work. The reality is that if you think about the work that insurance companies do broadly and across the globe, a lot of that is complex, rigorous, procedural, manual sort of work that needs to happen. And, you know, we've had some rounds of automation. But the reality is the automation we've had so far has been sort of rules-based automation, right? So the classically the way you and I went to school and grew up learning computer programming, which is, you know, if, then, except. So, you know, if you write down all the conditions, you write down all the results, you put all the except conditions, and you just write a software program. And it's everything that I programmed it to be, except that it can do it faster, it can do it scale, it can do it 24 hours a day, it can, you know, and I can't do all those things, so it just automates and does it faster. But what's happening with artificial intelligence is that it's changing that paradigm, because no longer are we saying, we're going to program the computer. In fact, with AI, I don't program a computer. I basically show it the question and the answer, and I do that about a million times over. And then we say, you computer, figure out how to program yourself. And that simple shift in paradigm is, in AI, is massive. It's showing up as massive results, and it's completely changing the future of work, because much of the stuff that could not be automated, that last mile that we didn't get through when we put all these core systems of records in place, and we still had all this manual work to do between those systems, now for the first time we can take that off. So anyway, so the point is, as AI comes into play, it changes the nature of work and the future of that work. And as that work of the future changes, you know, how do we in the insurance industry apply these new tenets, these new learnings, and these new capabilities, and actually automate that last mile? And as we do that, how do we take that workforce and use that to drive even more value at it? So that's kind of the second big thing I see happening. And then I think the third one, and this is the most interesting insight, and we've seen that's coming for a while, but you know, it was very evident in Las Vegas as you walk around and talk to people, is the fact that there, you know, in the back of this new technology and digital sort of waves that are coming in, entire industries, ecosystems, partnerships, players are sort of colliding and converging and coming together in very, very interesting ways, right? So we've always talked about, for instance, you know, IoT and smart homes, and what impact does that have? And, you know, when you see what Amazon is doing with Travelers, for instance, and combining, you know, so the smart home IoT package with insurance policies, you know, that's a great example of, you know, two very different industries, retail and insurance, converging to be able to meet a client need. Or, for instance, you know, all of the stuff that we're now starting to see with the big GAFAs, the Googles and the Amazons and the Facebooks, and are starting to sort of enter financial services at large, but more specifically, you know, insurance, that's again the convergence, the collision, the coming together, if you will, of completely different industries, all around generating a new value and driving a new customer experience, right? So you just take a step back and you look at those three trends, and each of them are sort of massive in their own light, right? And there's so much going on. But then all three of them are sort of coming together and sort of, you know, hitting you at the same time. And I think out of that, you know, what's coming through is a magical opportunity, if you will, for the leaders to really start separating themselves from the pack and applying that. And so anyway, you know, if I go back and think about InsurTech and I think about the event in Las Vegas, I think a lot of those themes are very clear. And I think we walked away, for one, sort of feeling really energized by that. And, you know, as I look now to 2019 and where our conversations are going, it's very evident that most of my clients are actually talking about those three big, big trends and how to sort of optimize around that. And by the way, there's a whole set of new toolkits that are now available and to address that as well. And so that's made for some very interesting conversations.
Yeah, I we could spend an hour on each of these. Just we could do three more podcasts. Maybe we should plan that for later on, Sanjay. But I want to ask you about the second one a little bit more, some follow-ups around AI. I think the way you described that is great, and then we've come a long way since the days, well, when I was in school, Fortran and COBOL, and which was very difficult for me and probably a piece of cake for you. But it is, when you really think about it, the term massive is not an understatement at all. It's big. Where in your work, or maybe even in your observations about the future and talking with people, where do you see AI having some immediate, I mean, it already is, I'm sure, but, you know, maybe an expanded impact? What sectors of insurance, of not just the industry, but also the different pieces of the value chain, whether it's underwriting claims, actuary, legal, distribution through salespeople. Where are you seeing seeing some impact?
That's interesting. So look, I think I'd probably start by saying, first off, AI is just a really massive field. And one of the challenges about AI is that, there are parts of it that are sort of maturing, there are parts of it that are just early stage evolving. So it's very important that as you approach AI, that you sort of first landscape what AI really is, and then figure out what's sort of working today and what's for the future, and approach it in a much more systematic way. And one of the ways I think about it is put in very simple words, it's language, conversation, sight, and knowledge. And I put it in that order, and I'll explain in 1 second. But language is, by the way, they're ordered in that sequence because higher up in the sequence, the more mature and the more applicable today the technology is. So language, which was first in my list, is the ability to read a sentence, a paragraph, a page, a book, right, a contract, a claim form, and then be able to extract all the information out of it in a way that you can understand it. So it isn't a page. It isn't what we call dark data in my industry. It isn't just coded into a PDF and then you've got to actually physically and manually read it. Now we have the ability to actually extract all the words out of that PDF and automatically categorize it and classify it and put it in what we call a structured database, right? So all the words are in the right places in the right form. So that's really important because, if you think about the insurance industry, there's so much that happens on documents. And being able to read documents through AI and thus be able to interpret it and do something with it is a massive improvement to where we are today. We see a lot of that, right? So for instance, we see language in underwriting, in first notice of loss. You've got claims in the front office. You actually have, in the front office, you have clients writing in emails and saying, look, I bought this new car and I want to add my spouse to it. And then how do I actually read that email and extract the meaning and the inference of all the words in that email so I can actually automatically respond to it, not necessarily have someone go read it, understand it, look up a policy, look up a vehicle type, go in and physically type something. And we're seeing that across the board. Underwriting is another great example. You've got a package coming in, and how do you extract all the information so you can automatically classify it, put it in the right risk queue, and then prioritize it in the right way so we're making better decisions. So language is a big one. And I think that is very mature. I think we've had years of experience now approaching it and doing it. There's a really strong ontology in play. There's a great framework that exists, and I think, that one is ripe for the taking. The second one on my list is I think about conversation, and conversation involves language, but it takes it to the next step. And what that means is, and we're all used to chatbots and, use our iPhones and, ask Siri for the traffic or the weather or whatever. And as you think through those conversations you're having with your Siri or with your Alexa at home or with your with other chatbots and voice assistants you've seen, what's going on in the back of that is two things, right? There's intent analysis, and then there's threading a conversation, right? And these are really important skills, right? So it isn't just about understanding a sentence. It's about intent analysis. I can say, well, geez, where's the nearest Starbucks? And you might say, where's the nearest Pete's? But the reality is the intent that both of us have is we want a warm beverage. We want a coffee, right? And I happen to use the word Starbucks, and you happen to use the word Pete's. But you know what? If there's no Starbucks in the next 10 miles and there's a Pete's, I'll take a Pete gladly. And so I think, that intent analysis is an important part, as is conversation threading, because when you and I talk, we don't talk the way computers are programmed to talk, right? So I'm going to say, I turn to you and say, Peter, would you like a drink? And you say, well, Sanjay, yes, I would. And it's like, well, do you want something warm or do you want something cold? And you say, well, actually, I want something warm. And I say, well, would you like a coffee or a tea? And then you kind of go. So you can see that there's bits and pieces of conversations, and you have to thread them together to understand that. And so much in the same way, when you apply AI at work, in the insurance world, there is bits and pieces of conversations that have to be threaded together. And then the intent has to be analyzed to be able to respond to it. It's the example I was using about, someone writing an email saying, well, geez, can you add my spouse to my insurance policy? Here's a name and so on and so forth, and there's my car number. you know, you have to understand that. You have to understand the conversation, those pieces. You have to go look up the records, and you have to make those adjustments and mail out a new copy, et cetera, et cetera. All of that requires conversation. And as I said, language is number one on my list, and then I get to conversation. The third, and we're actually doing this today, so this isn't as far as number three would imply. It's pretty much really starting to come together, is sight. Now, in our personal lives, we know what sight means because, you know, at least in my case, I have my iPhones. I take lots of family photographs and vacations and so forth. And if you haven't done this already, you should look at it. You go back and look at your photos, you know, it's already sorted them by my family members. So I can click on an image of my older son, and I can see photographs from, you know, all these years, you know, because the system has identified his face and it's matched it and found it and then sort of put them into one cluster. It's classified that as his photographs, right? And we've seen that in personal life, but, you know, the reality is all of that now applies in the business world. So one of the things we do, for instance, is, you know, we're working with machine learning and really using computer vision to unlock the sight. And the idea there is to look at images of, let's say, automobiles with the damages to them. And then just by looking at a photograph, use computer intelligence to be able to identify the part that is affected, and then eventually identify the size and the cost of the repairs associated with that damage. And the way we do that is, again, we're training machine learning models on the back of images and what we call labeled data in my industry. So it's basically data, which is image in this case, and the label that says, here's the part that's damaged, here's the cost of repair estimate, and then be able to feed that in. And again, we do that and keep training a machine learning engine so that we get high accuracy. And the first applications could just be lower accuracy, but, you know, is the car totaled or not? Should we send it for repair or not? Should we tow it to the nearest place or should we hold back? Easy decisions. And as the accuracy increases, very soon we should be able to sort of put out an exact dollar cost for what it's going to take to fix it and then use that in the decision-making process. So that's sort of sight. And then, of course, knowledge is the fourth one, and it's appropriately fourth on my list, on our list, in the industry list, because that's the hardest problem of those four to solve and crack, which is how do you capture all this embedded knowledge that you and I have, that our insurance adjusters have, that our policy underwriters have, right? And capturing that in meaningful ways and building knowledge graphs, which is the word we use in my industry, or what's known as knowledge microservices that embed that, that's actually a little further out. There's work on that's happening. There's POCs that we're implementing as an example, but it's not ready yet to roll out in a massive sort of, you know, implementation. So that's one way to think about it, right? Which is AI by itself is like this large mass of things, and, you know, every other day you're reading something in the newspaper, and so and so's, you know, second cousin twice removed is starting a startup with this piece of AI and that piece of AI. And you often wonder, well, that's kind of great, but what do I use now? And one of the frameworks we use is a simple logic of focus on language first, move on to conversation, try sight, and then today, you know, very early stage of knowledge. And that's allowed us a framework that, you know, helps companies we work with sort of think through in a much more structured fashion and deploy it in a stable, planned, strategically sort of oriented fashion. Does that make sense?
Really interesting. I really appreciate that list because I was feeling overwhelmed about it myself, to be honest. I wonder if there's another potential layer, though. I always think of technology as kind of like a pyramid. At the bottom, you have data, then knowledge. I'm sorry, data, information, knowledge. At the very top is wisdom. And maybe you're thinking number four, knowledge, is where you get to this place where, you know, you have this collective, you know, potentially decades and decades of real underwriting experience now in the computer. What can emerge from that? What can you do? Because the wisdom is the hard place to play, but I think it's worth maybe a lot from a strategy standpoint as opposed to maybe just the language or the conversation. Not that they're not important, but is that what people kind of fear too, is the wisdom of the computer, you know?
Well, that's a great question, actually, Peter, because we sort of just jumped forward into AI, and obviously that was, you know, much discussion and energy around that in short tech, which is probably how we sort of ended up here. But, you know, if you back up a little bit, you know, one of the ways to think about that pyramid you called out, right? So I sort of draw the pyramid, and I think at the bottom of the pyramid, I would draw the data, right? And data is more than just data. I mean, it's the strategy around data. It's the stacking up of a data infrastructure that allows you to coalesce the data, and it's the wrangling of all of the data that lies around your organization to pull it in a way that it's actually usable, right? So that's those three components, a strategy for data, the infrastructure for a data architecture, and then the wrangling to be able to put data so that it's normalized and it's usable, right? Those are three things that I think form the piece that's on the bottom, which is a layer of data. And then on the top, by the way, is this notion of strategy and change management and governance, right? So if you think about the pyramid, I would say that's the highest. And that's a top-down perspective. We have to have a strategy because, you know, you don't solve for digital transformation by saying, well, what's the next cool piece of technology I can kind of lay my hands on? I mean, the only way to get there is to sort of say, here's a business problem. Here's an evolution we're wanting to make. Now, on the available toolkits, if you will, of different technologies, you know, what's the right fit? And that's the best way to approach the problem. So strategy is really important. Change management, by the way, is significant because, you know, you're taking an existing, you know, plane that's flying, and you're basically saying, well, let me just, you know, here's a plane in flight. You know, let me take off that engine. Let me take off this other wing over here. Let me replace this with this new one because it's kind of faster and it's more efficient. It's really, you know, it's going to take us to the next level. But by the way, you got to keep your lights on. You got to still keep the airplane in the air. And that change management is a really, really important one, and oftentimes kind of sort of doesn't get enough attention. And in that case, it becomes very problematic, right? So change management is important. And then third one is governance. And by the way, you know, governance is a really, really important topic because in the world of AI, right, I mean, you know, this can become one of the largest things, you know, that we need to sort of get a handle on. And, you know, it involves ethics, it involves bias, it involves just command and control. I mean, I'll give you an example. We're probably one of the largest users of robotic software in the world, just given the size of the workforce we were talking about earlier and the work we do across industries. And one of the things, you know, that we find in the world of, you know, using software robots is, you know, it's very efficient and it gets so much work done and all this productivity that we get out of it. But, we had a situation early in our journey and someone in one of our clients in Europe sort of changed a password in one of the applications, a CRM application, which we at the time didn't realize or know about. And for 2 weeks, actually 10 days, you know, these 50 robots were just basically dead. They just couldn't operate because they couldn't log onto the system. And we had no idea because, you know, there's some ITQ, you know, jar file somewhere that says, you know, job number XYZ, blah, 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 has failed. No one's really looking at it in the context of a process. And this was a pretty important process, right? So what's happening is, you know, you go to the office, there are 200 people that work in the office, 100 of them don't show up. You and I both will know right away there's a problem and you can kind of get onto it. But if that sort of human workforce moves into a digital workforce and you've got all these software robots and these other bots and chatbots and so on and so forth, and 20 of them can't log in because of some, you know, issue somewhere, and you don't even know about it, that's a big problem, right? So anyway, I think you think about the pyramid, you know, the bottom is inevitably data with those three foundational pieces. And the top of the pyramid is inevitably kind of the strategy and the change management and the governance. And then what we see in the middle is four different things. We talk about AI, but AI is just one of them, right? So artificial intelligence is a big one. But actually, automation is a second. Analytics is third. And then experiential design is fourth, right? So we talk about AI, that's obvious. Automation is a whole suite of, you know, quickly applicable things like software robotics, right all the way through to orchestration of services, the software as a service implementation tools, right? There's a lot of work that I think is being done today by many of our customers, and actually significant potential still remains. And so one of the things that's easy to sort of jump to AI because it's sort of in the talk, it's very relevant, everyone's talking about it, but you can't overlook, right, the low-hanging fruit that's still on the tree that you can take off with automation. It's a big one for us. And then analytics, back to the point about data, analytics is massive because much of, I think, the insurance industry in particular has approached analytics in the past traditionally has been around reporting and visualization, kind of static, you know, look-back analysis. You know, why did this happen? What's the insight we can get out of that set of data from the past? As opposed to proactive and predictive, right? So proactively tracking and making recommendations and predictively you know, ordering repairs or pulling a part back to be able to sort of preserve life and get better returns. So there's a big move that's happening in analytics. And then the fourth one is customer experience, which I talked about earlier, right? As clients are rethinking sort of how they approach insurance because the rest of sort of how they think about their life is changing with the use of all of these devices and technologies and so on and so forth, very prevalent today. They're looking at insurance providers and saying, okay, well, you know, how do I get this information this way? And how do I kind of make this other thing happen? And, you know, again, the answer is not how many technologies can I throw into the answer? The answer is first, how do we think about that customer journey, that life cycle of how a client engages across the many points? And then how do we redesign that journey through the use of digital technologies? And then as a byproduct of that, what digital technologies play in, right? So that's the way I think about a pyramid. I think about data at the bottom and those three pieces of data, the strategy, the architecture, and then the wrangling. Then I think about four different sort of digital practices. I think of AI, automation, analytics, and experience. And then at the top, I think about strategy, governance, and change management. And I think that's a great recipe for success in approaching this in a very sort of structured fashion, as opposed to sort of jumping into the next, you know, kind of interesting thing that comes your way.
No surprise that you made my pyramid a lot richer.
I tell you, we've had enough experience. We've learned a lot, so it's a
yeah, sure,
you know, and made enough mistakes on the way. So you're getting a little bit of the benefit
yeah.
from that.
No, I think it's great, and I think you know, bringing your thoughts to the insurance industry is a good thing, and we need some new ideas. I think in the industry, I think you're starting to see some improvements already in the last 12 months for sure. There's been a lot more. I don't want to say, you know, grudging acceptance of the outside money and outside influence, but I think more of an embracing of it and realizing that the industry doesn't have all the answers inside the four walls of those companies, but they need to reach out to and get a good consulting viewpoint like Genpact provides. So with that, Sanjay, I appreciate your time very much. I would love to stay in touch with you. I hope to see you at InsurTech in 2019. But in the meantime, on behalf of our listeners, thank you for sharing these ideas. You've been a great guest.
No, and thank you for having me here.